Blog Talk Radio.
What up, everybody? Welcome back once again to another episode of The Menu on Blog Talk Radio. Big Red, Lena, and Brother B are in the house.
Yes,
what's
we are.
Good? What's good? What's
good?
What's
good?
What's good? Yeah, we definitely got an interesting topic tonight.
Necessary.
Huh?
Definitely necessary.
Yeah, you know, some things, you know, need to be in jail. A lot of people don't like to, you know, tackle certain things head on, but you know, when in life there's times where we must do this. So, yeah, once again, it's The Menu, y'all. Blog Talk Radio. Guest calling numbers 347-324-3395. That is 347-324-3395. You can catch us on Facebook, The Menu, Mind Your Mental, MINDURMENTAL. Instagram, the thing, at The Menu, MINDURMENTAL. And also Twitter. I forgot to do a Twitter page for The Menu. But yeah, it's Brother B Vision. 7 at Brother B Vision 7 on Twitter. So once again, this is The Menu, y'all. Big Red, Nina, Brother B in the house. Pardon me, I'm a little tired. That's why I'm going to try to take a little step back on tonight's show and let the ladies handle business. And so, Miss Lena,
yes.
How are you?
I'm pretty good. I can't complain. I'm not tired.
I got you. What's up, Red? How you doing, Red?
What up? I'm good.
What's going on, Red? I know you're good, but how are you?
I'm good. How am I?
Okay.
Good.
Okay. I know you're good, but how are you?
I'm chilling.
I got you. So, Ms. Lena, what made you come up with this topic for tonight?
So first, I want to put the disclaimer out. I definitely don't want anyone to think that it's an extension, especially those who tuned in last week. I think I kind of ended on a note where it was, you know, pretty much just kind of, you know, encouraging women to let go of hurt, pain, and move on. And just to be able to, you know, smell the roses. And then, you know, when we got off from that, I said we probably should, you know, kind of like double back and kind of track that. I know it's layers to this topic, and we're probably not going to even be able to cover it all tonight. But it's so many layers, and I felt like, you know, a lot of people, you ever had a conversation or tried to engage in a conversation with somebody? And when you try to engage in a conversation, you notice that you end up counseling or comforting a person because, you know, the trauma that they went through or whatever incident that they went through kind of takes over and captures the whole conversation to a point where you can't even have it because you got to consult that person. And that person that's being consulted is so out of tune with the trauma that they're experiencing that they don't want to admit it. They're ashamed of it and stuff like that. So it's kind of like in denial. So I noticed this about a lot of people that I engage with, and I definitely wanted to tackle it because I feel like it's something that we often, as people, avoid. And you know me, I always open with the definition. Last week we talked about ego. This week is trauma. And the definition says a deeply distressing or disturbing experience. This can happen at work. It can happen in your home. It can happen with your friends. It can happen in relationships. It can happen at school. You know, it's really nowhere that we can dodge this. But I think a lot of times when things happen, we often try to avoid it, or we were told this myth that if we address it, when we talk about it, we cry about it, it's a sign of weakness. And somehow strength is moving past it and acting like it didn't happen and don't allow it to stop you. But the reality is, I feel like childhood trauma transcends into teen trauma, transcends to adult trauma if it's not handled correctly. That's what made you want to have this discussion.
Okay.
Okay.
Let's think about that, Red.
Okay.
Think about that.
So one of the things that I think I wanted to cover tonight was really just, you know, the myth of us, you know, not even feeling comfortable addressing things. You know, I remember I had a friend, you know, who was abused in her household, you know, by her mom's boyfriend. And, you know, it was hard for her to tell her mom because, one, you know, no mother wants to, you know, even think that their boyfriend is checking their daughter out, and definitely not you over me, no way. You know, the other thing is that, you know, women, you know, oftentimes have a hard time finding men. So the last thing they found a man, they ain't trying to give it up because something their kids said. You know, so oftentimes, you know, we move on in a family. And certain things like this are swept under the rug. I've seen mothers pass down, you know, their trauma from broken relationships and almost put it on their son's back as if their sons have to save them from those relationships that they had. You know, you got men that's walking around that don't want to, you know, hurt their mom's feelings and choosing between their lover, their girlfriend, their wife, and their mother. You know, you got women who grew up with no fathers and are putting this burden in the men that they date to fulfill that burden, that they that absence that they had, that void that they have. This is trauma. You know, this is things that we carry on. Heck, I as a child had a drug addict mother who gave me broken promises endless time and time again. And I believed that I was worthy and more important than her addiction, but I lost to that addiction. So I didn't get no closure in that. You know, there's people who grow up, and I heard this time and time again. You know, I've had examples of what not to be, but didn't have examples what to be. That's trauma. When you don't have positive examples guiding you through life. So these are things that, you know, it's common. It's very common. But I think that people just don't address, and nobody's able to go back to their mother and say, you know what, you did this to me. Because then you have to worry about the backlash. Or saying, you know what, when you wasn't there, Dad, it affected me this way. And a lot of people don't like counseling. For some reason, I don't know, it's this myth that there's a weakness of going to therapy and to counseling. You know, I as myself understand that what I went through, and I never addressed it as a kid, know that I can also pass this trauma to my daughter. So guess who's in counseling as well? I'm in counseling, and then I put her in it, you know, because I know there's something that she may not feel comfortable coming at me to say, Ma, you did this to me. But she's in therapy for it. So a lot of people get...
Well, I'll say this. Brother B, if you want to speak, you can go ahead. I'll wait.
No, go ahead, Red. And what's up, Miss Terry?
No.
Let's see, Miss Terry's on. What's up?
Hey, Miss Terry.
Hey, Miss Terry.
All right, guys. Hi.
I'll say this. What you were saying is right, Miss Lena. You know, a lot of people don't want to address their trauma or things that they're going through, or they don't want to address the person that they know has given them, you know, that trauma. But, you know, sometimes you have to get to a point of just doing the healing on your own. I'm not saying anything is wrong with going to therapy or anything like that, but sometimes you got to do that healing on your own. You have to do some self-reflection. You have to do that healing on your own. And I feel that, you know, sometimes that works for, you know, that works for certain people, just doing that healing, like the spiritual thing. And I'm not talking about sitting up in church or anything. I'm just saying just going off of your own, like your subconscious, just, you know, like meditation and stuff like that. I feel that helps to heal people as well. Sometimes you have to, you know, sometimes I'll say this, You have to do it alone. And some people can do that, where they can do that healing of whatever has happened to them in their lives on their own. Like I said, it's self-reflection. You know, you look back at things that may have happened to you, once again, you know, how you've been brought up or whatever. And, you know, you have to do like a, you do it, do a changing on your own, especially like if you have children as well. As you said, you don't want your children to go through the things that you may have went through when you were growing up, or the things that your parents may have did. You don't want to do that with your children. Like I have did a lot of that as I've gotten older. The things that my parents did with me, I don't do with my kids. And like I said, they're grown men. They're not even kids. I'm talking about two grown men. So they're still my children, but I have to, and I also tell them, even though I'm your mother, I'm a woman first. Before I became your mother, I'm a woman first. And I'm still a woman. I'm just your mom, but I'm still a woman. So I also let them know that, you know, even though y'all are my sons, y'all are men. And y'all are going to think as men. So guess what? I have to treat y'all as grown men. Y'all are still my sons. Yeah, I'm still getting on you here and there about things. But I have to respect the fact that you are grown men. And see, that's the issue that I have. And I think that's, I guess you could intertwine that with trauma that I have with my own dad, where he doesn't, it's like he doesn't see me as being a grown woman. He sees me as still like I'm 14, 15 years old. And sometimes I have to let him know, like, listen, I'm not that age anymore. I'm grown and I'm a grandmother. Like, I'm not, you know, a little kid. So that's kind of like a thing, but I'm trying to work through it with him because I know he's old, a certain age, and I'm a certain age. So you know what, like I said, 89 years old, about to be 90 years old in February, Lord willing, and, you know, I have to, you know, try to work that with him and work it out on my own. And I'll look at myself and say, you know what, I got to let him have certain things because, you know what, you know, you just never know. So, yeah, I understand.
Well, my thing is, when it comes down to healing, because we don't allow ourselves to heal sometimes. Yeah, I agree on both sides. There's some people out there who may need to heal on their own, but there are other people who they need help. They need help. They need somebody to talk to. They need, you know, someone to you know, confide in. I mean, communication is key, but, you know, effective communication is everything. And it seems like nowadays, or even really before that, we do more talking at each other than talking to each other. And, you know, I'm not trying to say that, oh, the menu or what we do on podcasts are therapy, but for some people it is. And right. We have to, you know, remember that. We have to take account of that. And, you know, sometimes we do have to be mindful about what we say and certain things that, you know, we may represent, because some people may take it the wrong way. You know, you know, words and things like that are to, you know, people's own interpretation. So we do have to be mindful. I mean, yeah, I've gone through my share of stuff, but, sometimes I could do it alone. Sometimes I couldn't. Sometimes I just had to open up to a brother of mine or, you know, a homegirl and, you know, like try to figure things out. See, the thing is, we're not on this planet alone. And a lot of us need to stop acting that way, because that hurt that you may think that no one else is, you know, picking up on. I mean, it's all about vibes. Depending on what you say, somebody can pick that up. Depending on what you do and how you move, someone could pick that up. No one knows, because there are people out there that do know, and there are people out there that can sense it. So I think that we have to learn or relearn to be more human, be more understanding of each other's, you know, journeys in life. And the things that we have gone through and the things that people are still going through. I mean, look at this COVID situation. We was doing Absolute Truth last night, and he was talking about, you know, the whole vaccination thing, you know, anti-vax versus pro-vax. And it's like, you know, it has people in fear. And fear is a big thing, you know, to just throw on the pot when people are going through other stuff that they don't even talk about. So once again, like we got to really be mindful, kumbaya moment, but we got to be more human. You know, there's a lot of things going on in the world where we just kind of lose touch with one another and lose touch with things in general. And it's not a thing of putting your business out there. Because me coming up, you know, parents, the elders would tell you, oh, you know, nobody needs to know what's going on in your house or nobody needs going on in your business and all this and that. And I get it. But at the same time, some of these people weren't able to heal on their own. So they kept a lot of stuff in. We, you know, our elders, they kept a lot of stuff in. So the whole question is, did they really heal from whatever trauma, whatever things they were going through? Did they really ever have a say on things? Because who was really listening? If they
weren't believe it or not, a lot of those people thought that they were self-healing.
Yeah, exactly.
You understand? Like, there's a reason why there's professionals, you know, that handle these matters. You know, I get it, self-healing and keeping it within and keeping it to yourself. But you can't possibly know everything, right? So sometimes when I went to therapy, I'll give you an example. When I went to therapy, you know, I thought my triggers was my mother. And I thought my triggers was growing up without a father, right? And I found out that in discussing therapy, that my issues lie with my siblings, the relationship that I never had with my siblings and stuff like that. Here I am thinking everything's cool. Like, I know my siblings, they still here, they're alive, da-da-da, I lost my brother, so-and-so. But I was more traumatized by the relationship or the lack thereof relationship that I had with my siblings because of the trauma from my mother. And it's crazy because I remember in therapy discussing things. And I remember every time I mentioned my older sister, like, bawling, crying, coming to an emotional state. And then one day I said, holy shit, who knew I was bothered this much by her? So sometimes talking it out and you figure out what, you know, where it takes you emotionally and stuff like that. So I get emotional, but sometimes you need a professional to guide you through that. A lot of times when you're a parent, like for me, If I needed to be healed, how can I heal my child from the trauma that she's going through while healing myself? So I think a lot of people forget about that. Like, you can't, there's no way in the world you can heal a child from the trauma that they're going through, that you passed to them from the trauma that you're dealing with yourself and that you didn't know you was passing to them. So now you got two things to do. You got to address the trauma within you, and then you got to address the trauma within your child. Like, good luck, Superwoman. Good luck, Superman. Sometimes it's just beneficial to. I'm one of those people that's like pro therapy. Like, go to therapy, talk about it, release it. Because I was that kid that held it in. You know, I box, and people give me props all the time. Oh, Selena, the boxer, the boxer, the boxer. But what they didn't know is that was my release from all the bull crap that I was going through, and it still wasn't the proper release, because when I got out that ring, guess what? I had to go back to that life that bothered me that I thought I was releasing in that ring. And then one day I went to therapy.
And, you know, I don't know if Red or Ms. Cherry has anything to add at this point.
I was going to say, I think you made a comment about how our older generation handled things. And, like, what came to mind was how, you know, we kind of been raised not to air our dirty laundry, right? You want to put it out there. But I think the logic was behind that was sometimes you air your dirty laundry and you get it cleaned up and you're ready to move on. Now you have a lot of people reminding you where you were. So you can't move forward. Depending on, and I believe in therapy. I believe that some people need formalized therapy also, so I'm not against it. But you do have to be careful who you talk to, because when you have gotten past that trauma, there will be people that will continue to remind you of your trauma, which stops you from being able to grow.
And you know what? Say that, and it's interesting how the whole word, like, therapy comes up, because, you know, going through, you know, my journey and things of that nature. There was a brother of mine, and I didn't even know that he was going to therapy, or I didn't know he was speaking to someone. And at that time, you know, years ago, I was younger, so I really didn't understand. I was like, therapy? I was like, what the hell are you talking to, you know what I'm saying, somebody else for? Like, when you can talk to one of us. Like, you got bros to talk to. And at that time, I didn't, you know, really get it. And I think, you know, with certain people, especially in, you know, the melanated community, we look at therapy as taboo.
Uh-huh.
It's like you said, you know, Michelle, we don't want to be judged, or we don't want to be looked at a certain way because, mm-hmm. you know, you went through something, so people are automatically going to label you crazy and then label you, you know, crazier because you have to talk to somebody about your problems and you can't settle mm-hmm. it on your own. But that's not the case. That's not the case. Like I said, it boils down to communication, because if you're not able to get that weight off and you're walking around with it, it can manifest itself in so many different ways that could be unproductive and non-positive. I mean, that's the reason why there's people out there that have drug habits, you know, that have sex habits, that have, like, eating disorders, you know, and other things of that nature, because there's certain things that they're not addressing, something that they went through. There was a trigger, something happened, and it's like they feel that the world is not for them or the world is against them. And, you know, not everybody can afford the professionals, so what do? They go to a friend or they go to a family member hoping that they can get some good advice, but the sad part is, sometimes, no, we cannot trust certain people with our information. We can't trust
they'll throw it up in your face.
Emotions. Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's
you have people
that will
do
feeling.
Just that. Mm-hmm.
You have,
right,
I think that's the
face.
Worst feeling in the world, to confide in someone about something very personal and emotional, and then they turn around and throw it up in your face. Then it could cause a shutdown. Because I know I tried to do that one time, and it made me shut down. It made me like, you know, what the hell is the purpose of talking to people if I tell you something and then you throw it in my face? So, you know what, I'm just going to stay closed off. But that didn't help either. It's just that I spoke to the wrong person. They were very subjective, you know, in their mind state and in their conversation. And I don't think their conscious level was ready to deal with what, you know, I was coming with. And that's, you know, that's one of the things that we have to do. We have to look at the conscious level of certain people that we talk to.
I was going to say also, I think when you go to, like, a formalized professional therapist, their job is not to, like, judge you. It's to get you to the point where you find the answer for yourself,
mm-hmm.
which is different. When you talk to your friends give you their opinion.
Right.
So you're not really coming to a solution. You're listening to what they say, and you may or may not like what they have to say. And you see, a therapist mm-hmm. is more like, well, what do you think? Where is that coming from? How would you resolve it? So I guess the goals that they have are completely different.
Plus, you also got to take into the fact that when we're talking to our friends, we're talking to friends that been through stuff, they done stuff that they can't even figure out their way through. But they're going to help you through your trauma because they somehow know it all but don't know enough to address the trauma within their own family. So I don't go to people. I go to a professional where I know there's confidentiality. You know, mm-hmm. I know that, I ran into my therapist and she acts like she didn't even know me in a supermarket. And I'm like, hey, she didn't act like she know me in a supermarket. And she's looking at me like, no, like, I'm not at work and I'm not here to talk to you. So, you know, the reality is, I think that, you know, we speak into the wrong set of ears, right? And somehow we're letting, you know, misguided people guide us to where we need to be. And that, to me, is, like, mind-blowing within itself. I think that, you know, the whole thing about family telling you to keep your business in the house, it wasn't to protect you. It was more so to protect their images and what people may think of them.
True.
You know, it wasn't to protect you. It was more so, you know, what they did not want people out there to think of them. They didn't want people to be able to name your family or the family name or have any type of definition of the type of parent they were. So it was keep it in the house, keep it in the house, keep it in the house, which I don't think is the best thing, you know, to tell. Don't get me wrong. I'm a big believer on what goes on in my house happens, you know, stays in my house. I don't really I feel like if it's such a situation that needs to be addressed and my child is impacted by it, I'm not upset if the teacher calls me and goes, oh, you know, Crystal was impacted by, you know, you yelling at her the other night. I'm not like, girl, why you go out there and tell these kids she was impacted? So that's something that I would want to know so that it could be addressed. I mean, we live in a different day and age, right, where kids now know. Like, I never, when I was a kid, knew anything about suicide, right? But now you get it more often. You're hearing kids committing suicide because they felt unloved, because this was, like, it's amazing how the world has took a drastic turn. But if I cut the limits of where my kid can go and release, then chances are she holds it in, and then if she doesn't feel comfortable to me, then what happens one day? I walk into a room and find her hanging from a thing? Because I told her what goes on in this house doesn't go nowhere. So at some point,
Hold on for a second. I'm sorry to interrupt you. Caller 111, you're on the air with the menu. What's up?
Yeah, I'm just listening to all the interesting insights and wisdoms, as usual, from the
Joe.
Show. Hi, Joe.
Joe.
Hey, guys.
I miss
hey,
you,
brother.
Joe.
Hey,
Joe.
Huh?
We got Red, Cherry, and Lena on the line.
Hey, Red, Cherry, Lena.
Yo, maybe you can enlighten us.
He just put it all in one sentence.
Yeah.
But no, you know what? I have to say real quick before Mr. Joe jumps in, I do have to agree. That suicide thing. You know, there was someone that my daughter was dating. And you know, no father really wants to have to deal with that. You know, boys dating their daughters and things of that nature. But this kid was actually, this young man, he's actually, I liked him. Like, he was just a solid, you know, dude. I mean, made sure my daughter, door to door, made sure she got home safe, you know, made sure he was very protective of her, very respectful. And then one day I got this phone call, and I was like, what the hell happened? Like, you know, one minute, like, I mean, this kid was in karate, was very athletic, rode his bike all over the damn place. I mean, you didn't see it. You didn't see it. And then next thing you know, like I said, you get that phone call, and it's like, well, what the hell happened? And it just makes you wonder. It's a weight that I kind of carry. Because about a month before it happened, you know, my daughter was like, hey, he wants to talk to you. And, you know, my work schedule gets crazy sometimes. And, you know, me and him have spoken, but it's not like he ever said anything that would lead me to believe or feel that he was going down that road. But then it happened. And then I was like, oh, did I screw up? Like, was I, like, not the ear for him to be able to vent to? And see, this is why, you know, I whether it's a therapist or someone that you confide in, sometimes you just got to get it out. Like I said, I will never say that I would have maybe been the person to stop him from doing what he decided to do. But what pains me is the fact that I didn't even get the opportunity because, once again, I didn't know. I didn't think. I never saw it. And that's the whole thing.
Maybe
there's,
you
there's things that go on that we don't see. You know what? He had something to
maybe
say.
Maybe he wouldn't have told you because what goes on
in this house
stays in this house.
Yeah, but you know what? It was bigger than the house. That's the whole thing. It was bigger than the house. And that's kind of the trauma that I carry. Because I didn't get a chance to speak to him, and I really carry that weight myself.
So let me ask you, what have you done since that conversation, since that episode, to change, to help with that trauma? like, are you making yourself more available? Are you asking questions now to see how your teenagers are doing? Are you engaging? Are you checking? Or they look fine, so they must be fine.
Listen, I'm at a point where, you can ask Red. I'll just text her or call out of nowhere. Yo, what you doing? What's with them? Like, what you making? Like, I just got to do the check-in. Like, that situation right there made me be more active. Like, even with my brothers, I'm like, yeah, we all grown men, but, you know, I got to, hey, how you doing? I'm fine. All right, I just want to check on you and make sure you're good, man. You know what I'm saying? Like, I got to do that. You know, with my loved ones, I have to do that now because I felt like that it was a left hook. You know, when I got that phone call, and it was so unexpected, and I don't ever, it's a very uncomfortable position to be in, and I wouldn't want anyone to be in that position. So what I do right now is, all I can do is just be an ear or a shoulder or, like, do my check-in and, you know, make sure it's good so I can feel like I'm being proactive instead of reactive.
Listen, it's tough being on the other end of the on the other side of the fence. I remember, you know, a friend came to me, vented to me. I didn't really have the answers for her, right? And it's okay for me to listen and not have the answers. But what I couldn't fathom with is listening, not having the answers, giving her misinformed advice, and then not really saying, yo, you think, you know. And I remember I said to her, like, I think you should see a therapist. And you would think she took it like, yo, you know, I appreciate that. I was like, I got a therapist for you, so-and-so-and-so. And you know what she said to me? Oh, you trying to say I'm crazy? You trying to say
And that's the misconception. That's the big misconception.
I'm not trying to say you're crazy.
Yeah, well, that's the big misconception, especially, you know, in our community.
But what I am trying to say is if you could call me up and break down, emotionally distressed, cry your eyes out, and go back to the person who did it to you, yeah, that's crazy. You need somebody to talk to so that you can figure out somebody that can navigate you to, you know, getting down to what it is that's really impacting you and getting the results that you really need. But I thought it was crazy for her to go back, but I would never tell her that because I'm not judgmental, but the reality is I wanted her to speak to somebody so that she could be guided. And it sucks that you can't even recommend, hey, I got a therapist that would be good for you without them taking it as a...
Exactly. What do you think, Mr. Joe?
Well, I think most parents are lousy parents. And I'm not talking about you guys or the black community. I'm talking about parents in general do not know how to be parents. For people who commit suicide means that they do not have somebody to talk to. They have despair. They think that life is not worth living. I remember watching, and this may seem trite, if you guys ever seen the movie Boys Town, and I think around the first 5 minutes or so, one was Spencer Tracy, and he was a priest, and he opened up the facility for kids. One guy says, if I had a best friend, I never would have become a criminal. He was on death row. So most people do not know how to be parents. They don't know how to be friends. And men, especially, do not like to be vulnerable. So if we have a problem, we don't like to go to somebody to show our vulnerabilities because we don't have that particular person who knows how to deal with it. But of parents, I gave a compliment to a pair of parents about 2 or 3 years ago. And I won't go into all the details, but they were always reassuring the kid, always listening to the kid, always making the kid feel that he was part of the family. I told the bigger brother that, you know, if you have a family like that, and I told parents, if you treat kids like that in general, when they grow up from the ages of 2, 3, 4, 5 to the age of 21, you will never, ever have better friends, not even your own spouse, than your own kids who will love you till you die. Who will never send you to an old nursing home, an old folks home. They'll always take care of you. But we, even though there's books available, people fail at being true friends to their kids, and I know that's going to trigger people into thinking, well, I'm not supposed to be a friend to my kid, and you're right. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying when the kid, if we can train crocodiles, and I'm literally saying if we can literally train crocodiles, polar bears, rhinoceroses, if you watch videos on YouTube, to be caring, affectionate animals, we can train our kids to love us, trust us, so that no matter what happens, bullying at school, bad marks, gangs in the neighborhood, they can always come to us. Even if we don't have the right advice, they know that we're there not to be judgmental, yes, to correct them when they're wrong, but to always love them when they're wrong and beat their asses when they're wrong and love them just because they're there. So I always blame the parents. Because,
well, you know, okay.
Yeah.
Well, you know, sometimes what's crazy is sometimes the parents are the trauma. In some
oh,
cases.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying.
Sometimes the parents, yeah, sometimes the parents are the trauma. Sometimes it's the sad part is when you can't, like you said, turn to them. And sometimes it just boils down to time. Some people just we're so busy with, you know, oh, I got to do this, or I got to take care of that. Like, it's like we don't really take the time to be who we need to be to one another, to be who we need to be to our children. Like,
yes, exactly.
We're always,
right.
You know, yeah, we're always either working or we're concerned with our own pursuits. Because one thing I've learned about parenting so far, and I'm only 18 years in the game, is just, you know, with my daughter, is that you have to kind of put certain things that you want to do aside and be like, hey, what's going on with you? Like, talk to me. Like, you know, what's up? And me and my daughter have a great relationship. I don't expect her to talk to me about everything, but she does come to me. And I let her know that I appreciate the fact that you do talk to me. And some things I really don't want to hear. Oh, some things I just don't want to
hear. Yeah, but see, at that
point,
you can't be like that as well. Now, I want to tell you that in terms of some things you have to listen to. Because like I said, my sons, I tell you all the time, and Brother B, you know this, they are my sons, but they are men first. And sometimes some of them uncomfortable conversations I have with them in terms of sex with their girlfriends and, you know, anything else they want to talk to me about. And I tell them that, and once again, you know why I'm like that with them? Because I could not do that with my own mother or my father. I couldn't come to them and talk to them about sexual things or things that's going on with my body. The youngest one, you know, 23 years old, he'll come in here and, you know, sorry to say he's on the air, but he'll come in here and whip it out, Mom, look at this. Oh, boy, I don't need to see that. I've seen it, you know, many times when he was younger. But you know what? I want him to be comfortable to tell me if something is wrong with him in those areas, you know, whatever area, his body or whatever. That. Like I said, I made you. I've seen it 1,000 times. But if it's something that he doesn't understand and if it's something that, you know, I have to, I'll be like, all right, well, you know what? We're going to make an appointment for a doctor or I'll help you make an appointment, whatever. So you understand what I'm saying? Sometimes you have to get that uncomfortable with them, even though that's your child.
Absolutely.
I want to piggyback off of something that Joe said, and I get it. Blaming the parents or sometimes it has a lot to do with the parents. I want to clear that up because I was a youth, right? I told y'all what I went through. And I was a youth who contemplated suicide. I had plenty of people that surrounded me that loved me. I had plenty of friends. I had plenty of elders that I could have went to and spoke with. The reality is what I didn't have is somebody that resonated with what I was going through, somebody that could identify with some of the issues that I had, right? Because these people had their own lives, and although they were my aunts, they were my uncles, they couldn't really connect or resonate with what I was going through. So sometimes it's a sense of belonging, right? Because these people had a mother growing up. They had a father growing up. You know, here I am, a youth, no mother, no father. My grandmother passed away at an early age. That wasn't their experience, so they couldn't guide me through something that they did not know, right? So sometimes it's a sense of not belonging. Sometimes it's a sense of not having. That's why when people go through certain things. Like, for instance, if you have an alcohol addiction, right, you don't go to friends who don't drink to get you through that. They have a meeting, an AA meeting, and everybody, you know, celebrates sobriety. They all kind of push each other through it because they all knew what each other was going through. NA is the same way, Narcotics Anonymous. You know, Shoplifters Anonymous. They group you with a bunch of people who suffered the same thing that you suffer and can guide you through that. So, you know, I think that's important for a lot of kids, but the reality is even with gay children, like their parents aren't gay and they're scared, but they want to belong to a group that can resonate with them.
Mm-hmm.
So I think a lot of time when these kids, you know, contemplate stuff like suicide or they go through with it, it's not more so they wasn't loved and they didn't have their parents. It's that they were misunderstood. They felt they were misunderstood. They felt like they didn't belong. They felt like they were different, indifferent from the people who surrounded them. And a lot of times, like, think about it. Your son comes to you and says, I'm gay. You're not going to go find a bunch of gay kids to hang out with him so he feels like, you know, he's regular. Mm-hmm. If anything, a lot of times you're challenging that. Oh, you're a kid. You don't know what that is. And da-da-da-da. Like, that's not, no, you're going to like girls. So a lot of times it's more so about resonating and having, you know, that support system of peers that resonates with what exactly that you're going through. And I think that's more so more often what leads children to suicide. I don't think it's like parents loving them or parents not being their friends. In some cases, I do believe that the trauma came from the parents, but in most cases, it's their peers, you know, when they walk out into that world.
Yeah, but
you have parents.
But, Jerry, if you don't have parents that can resonate with you, then the parents, you have to ask why. No matter what the situation is, if you're a kid, and you're growing up, and you don't have the mother and the father that you can talk to. See, the parents' role is to make the kid feel safe, safe and important, growing up. And if the kid's reaching the preteen and teenage years without that feeling, even though they know, well, mom and dad loves me, but if they're not showing it the proper way, sure, mom and dad can say, you know, you got to get over it. You're getting to be a man now, and, you know, if you really want to talk to me, I'm available, but I'll be available in about, half an hour or 2 days or something. No. The kid has to feel that mother and father loves me no matter what, will beat my ass if I'm, for example, if the kid's going to go run across the street, runs away from the daddy's and mommy's hand, the kid should get a beating, cry his or her ass out, but the mother and father should say, you know why we beat you? And if the mother and father are crying while they're doing it, it'll be even better. To let them know, I love you. If you go across the street, you could get run over, and I'll never see you anymore. The kid knows that they deserve the beating, not because they did something bad, but because of the repercussions that could happen to the family. If the mother and father do not know how to present that kid with the impression that that child can feel safe, talk about whatever, at any time, you can be loved, you can have love, but it's not complete. It's not completely effective.
Well,
would you want your kid to respect you because of what you mean to them and because of how you treated them, or you want your kid to respect you because you beat their ass out of fear?
Well, hold on. Before you answer that, I think it's a little deeper than that. I got to say something real quick, and then Ms. Cherry needs to chime in. The thing is, nowadays, we live in a society where they take a lot of the power away from the parents. And at the same time, we have to also acknowledge parents aren't perfect. Like you said earlier, you know, some of these parents have their own trauma, you know, that they have to deal with. There's some parents that were young parents. They became, you know, parents young, and it's like they're trying to still figure out the world. Meanwhile, they're having a kid, so it's a double duty that they have to deal with, and some are not ready for the responsibility of it. But there's really, sometimes there's no one to help them or get them through it. So it's more than just, to me, it's a plethora of things besides just the parents and besides, you know, things with just the kids. But it's like, if we don't deal or address our own issues, like, it was said earlier, how can we go forward to help, you know, someone else with that, Ms. Sheriff?
So I'm going to say something that's probably going to create a little bit of a controversy. I'm almost 50, and I think a lot of the things that are going on, I have a son that's in his 20s. The kids nowadays, they're not being raised with the coping skills that we had. Like, I remember going to school, and everybody didn't love me. But guess what? I got through it. And nowadays, it seems like if your child goes to school and he has a problem with Billy, he's not able to fixate on the other half a million kids walking around that school that don't have a problem with him. He gets fixated on that one person, and it overconsumes him to the point where his self-esteem is affected. Even though you can show him love and everything at home, he's just fixated on that one person, and it brings them down to the point where now they're not able to move forward. They're thinking about, well, if I have to go through this for the rest of my life, I might as well not be here. But when we were going to school, it wasn't like that. You had a problem with this one, you had a problem with this one, you try to stay away from them, but if it got physical, unfortunately, sometimes you had to go there. A lot of times it didn't. And I just think, you know, it all started when every child had to win. You know, we never even, I remember when I was like running track and playing ball and stuff like that, you had a winning team and you had a losing team. There was no runner-up where every kid got a little trophy to make them feel good. Sometimes you have to learn that you will not win. You will not win. You learn to winning and you learn to deal with losing. Yeah, and we definitely have lost that with our kids nowadays. Everybody.
Yeah, the entitlement. The entitlement, definitely.
And that's the problem. Go ahead, Ms. Cherry.
Oh no, I'm done.
Oh yeah,
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Go ahead, Red.
No, as I said, you know, basically want to say what you said, but just like I said, like, rejection builds character, like, you can see that, and that's a trauma as well with, you know, like, a lot of these young men, when they get rejected from females, they, you know, I remember when back in the days, and that used to happen with us, and, you know, the guys just, you know, all of a sudden they call you all kinds of names, and you got bottles thrown at us, and all that other stuff. Now these guys are taking it to the extreme where, as you can see, I think it was last year, something when that young man had sliced up that girl's face because, you know, he rejected her. He didn't want to, you know, she didn't want to engage in whatever he was offering. And it's just like, you know, that's a person with a problem that, once again, yeah, he should definitely see it there. Therapist about that, or that's something that, because like I said, maybe growing up, you know, he didn't get that love, or he didn't he don't know how to take rejection.
First of all, I want to say hi, everyone. Hi.
Hello.
Hey.
Hello.
Hi, who's this?
Who you think it is, bruh? Red already knows. She's like, oh, shit, the other midget's here.
Oh, Lord.
Come on, brother
B. Here we go.
The other
Mika. Mika. Oh, God.
Mika too, right?
Yeah.
First of all.
Yeah.
How you doing?
Oh,
hey, what's up, Mika?
Hello, everyone. Good evening. I was doing the mom thing, but now my preteen kicked me out, so there's that.
Fine.
I left because he was getting on my damn nerves. But you know what? To touch on what Red's saying, there's something else about that, too. And I'm going to tell you, just from my own personal experience, and it's not a dig at guys, Brother B, but it's one thing that I have noticed. Oh, yeah, I'm just letting you know right now, is that a lot of guys are coddled by their mothers.
Mm-hmm.
Now, wait, before anybody
Absolutely.
Jumps in, understand something else. Those mothers are also coddling them because they feel that they have to do that because there's no guy in the house. It's not all the time. It's not with all mothers. But having come across one who turned out to be a complete and utter narcissist, that also plays into that whole shit with them not being able to take rejection. I'm sorry.
Oh, wait. All right.
True or false? Think about it.
I agree, but at the same time, all right. Well, once again, there's a gap because from what Joe was saying,
I'm doing devil's advocate because
No, I got you. I got you. But from what Mr. Joe was saying to what Ms. Cherry was saying and what's about to be said, there's a gap. There's a huge generational gap. And I have an issue, as I said earlier, with how there's certain vices or certain things that have been taken away from the parents as to where they can't raise their child or the children the way they want, which also causes another issue, especially with your parents. Because no one wants their hustle when it comes to their parents. Like, you know, you have people out there, oh, I'm the best parent, or I'm this parent, or I'm that parent, or whatever, whatever. But once again, they go through their own shit, and sometimes they put their shit on their kids. So when someone else steps in the home and turns around and tells them, hey, you can't say that to your kid, you can't raise your kid like this, you can't do this, you got to make your kid this. See, now that causes another problem, because then there was a dude that I worked with years ago, and his daughter got out of line with him, and he tapped her on the butt. Well, she went to school the next day, said something to the teacher, and next thing you know, he was in handcuffs. So what does that say about people, you know, in their parenting or trying to be parents? What does that say about the entitlement that some of these kids out here are feeling now? What does that say about the entitlement that some of the adults are feeling? They're like, well, hey, if the system's going to do it, then, yo, you do it then. I ain't got to do nothing. I got my own stuff to deal with. So then there's a disconnect comes about. And then at the same time, these kids are like, well, you can't touch me. You can't touch me because if you do, I'm going to do X, Y, and Z. I've heard other people say that their kids have told them that before, and I'm like, wow. Because if I know if me coming up, let me pick up the phone and call 911.
Your nephew did that, but I fixed his ass. Your nephew pulled that, and I'm going to tell y'all exactly what I did to him. I dialed the number, and I gave him the phone, and I told him straight up, understand, you're leaving my house with the clothes on your back, and you're lucky you're doing that. Your games, your computer, your clothes, your toys, all that shit stays here. And you better hope you end up in a good home, because there's fucking men out there that will fucking touch you inappropriately. So have fun with that. You still want to leave my house? Go right on ahead. Tell me why he hung up, gave him my phone, and went in his room and waited for the rest of his punishment.
But you know what's crazy? So someone will say that you're still a bad parent. Because, you know, there's some liberal or someone out there that will actually say,
ever.
Yeah, well, they'll say that. Because you know what, you did the old schooling.
This is my point. This is my point. There are certain things that we, and let's be real about ourselves here, that there are certain things that we have to break because they were just toxic. There was no way around that. There was just no way. But something like that, shit, I'm going old school on you and I don't care. I'll be the bad parent. I'm fine with that. But I guarantee you one thing, my kids will respect me and they will do what they have to do. So by all means, call me the worst parent in the universe. But when my kid isn't locked up, talk to me. You understand what I'm saying? I take care of my child before I let the system take care of my child. Because there is too many young black men and women that get caught up in that shit.
Here's another way that a mother took care of that.
Yeah, let me ask you a question. Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Mr. Joe. I'm sorry.
Okay. There was a mother, she told me a couple of weeks ago, she told us I was on the show with her. And the same thing happened because of what's going on in the school system where they're actually trying to divide the family. Her son came to her and said, you can't touch me. I'll dial the cops. So she didn't pick up the phone and give it to him, but she had like a five-minute conversation with him and told him, if you do that, then maybe they'll come and they'll arrest us, your mama and your daddy. And if they do that, you might end up in a foster home. We might have a record. Your brother, I think the kid had a brother and a sister. Your siblings, your brothers and sisters, they could be without their mothers and their fathers just like you. Is that something that you really want to happen? Now, she had a five-minute conversation. I'm just summarizing it, giving you the thumbnail sketch. So the kid realized that what he was doing was disrupting the family, and he decided not to. But this is a real problem today. Kids feel you touch me, you speak to me the wrong way, you're going to jail, and they will take advantage of it.
Yep. Can I ask all of you?
I think a lot will.
Red wanted to say something.
No, I just wanted to say that, you know, in terms of that, like, I was working in the after school and the kids were acting up. So what I did was I told them, I said, listen, y'all going to write, y'all all remember writing down, your teacher would make you write 25 times or 20 times,
oh,
I was brave or something like that, right? I did that.
I'm not going to
And I got
that.
called in by my supervisor, and he told me, oh, that's considered capital punishment. I said, are you kidding me? And this was years ago when this happened. I said, are you capital punishment?
Wait a
I said, you got that done to us all the time. Now it's considered capital punishment?
Well,
that's
probably.
We're getting a paddle.
Well, now they look at
and there are schools in Texas that actually reinstituted that shit.
Yeah, but see, you know, that's
capital
that's
punishment.
Well, for some kids, that's problem. For some people, that's problem. And you know, like, it's whatever's on the book from then compared to now, it's like anything you do can cause something, and you can chalk it up to good parenting, you can chalk it up to good parenting, you can chalk it up to but the fact of the matter is nowadays, anything, is any and everything is just, you're doing that. You're doing this for yourself. You're doing this for this person. You're doing that for this person. And we can talk about stuff with kids a little bit, but it still goes back to the adults. The adults who have kids. It still goes back to, you know, to the individual who feel that it's okay to have a double standard when it comes down to a certain thing. It's okay for you to hurt, but I'm not going to. It's okay for you to talk, but you can't say anything. You can't talk, but you're not supposed to talk to people. You're supposed to, you know, just put everything on your back and, you know, move forward. And that's just the sad language that we are dealing with. Like I said, it's beyond the boundaries. It's something that
Hello?
We need to think.
Yeah, you hear it too, right?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, you're breaking
Brother
up.
B, your audio is in and out, bro.
I'm sorry.
B, how much more time we got before?
32
How much
minutes.
More time we got?
32 minutes. We got some time.
Okay. Just want to make sure. One of the things that I wanted to tap into, and I get it, a lot of the old school ways, people felt like they got results from it and stuff like that. But the sad part is that what I'm hearing is, and I need to give y'all that meaning again, a deeply distressing or disturbing experience, right? So beatings work for us, so we think that that's the old-fashioned way. Ain't nothing wrong with a good old-fashioned beating. But I'm sorry to tell you that that's a disturbing, distressing experience. You guys are passing down trauma. You mean to tell me that us as parents, there's no effective way of getting results out of children besides getting a paddle, besides beating them? Like, I got beat, and I can honestly tell you I turned out right, but it wasn't because of beating. I feared my mother. I literally lost my mom at 11, but I can honestly tell you I didn't love her as an adult. I didn't love her because, wait a minute, because she spent majority of the time passing down what was passed down to her, which was ass whoopings, and she thought that was parenting. She thought that was parenting.
That's because she got it from her parents.
But this is what I was saying about breaking generational curses. That's it.
Exactly.
That's a generational curse. You know,
right, but the crazy part is that
we are all,
I don't know.
To some extent or another, we all try to break generational curses. Like me, like when I punish my kids now, listen, this is what I do to my kids to punish them. I take their, well, I can't say Donovan anymore, but what I do to the young guy is I fucking take all of his power cords for all of his electronics. I take his phone. I give him about an hour of TV, and I take that away. And it's effective.
But then,
I think I've only had to beat. Well, there's a reason why it's effective for him. And again, this is why I was talking about breaking generational curses, because he pissed me off. He just would not stop doing this one particular thing. Can't remember what it was now.
But what is the curse? What is the curse?
But
that's what, you know what I'm saying?
Like,
what is the curse?
The curse is the beatings for shit that's really not necessary to get a beating for. You know, for me personally,
one of the reasons why the system don't want you to beat your kids because some parents got extra with it and went into abuse. Like nowadays, you spank your kid, it's considered abuse. But the whole thing is, one thing we can call it a generational curse. And sorry to cut across. If we can call it a generational abuse, but listen, come on, we all had our ads. What we all had our ads with?
But
let
me say this. You know why it got out of control? I'm sorry, it's okay. No, I just wanted to say this one thing. You know why it got out of control, or rather it got, like, the light shines on it? Because of what happened to that little girl years ago. And once again, sorry to say this, we're going to have to put race into this, because she was a young white girl that it happened to, a little white girl that happened to. But just as you said,
Wait a minute. I think it was a Steinberg.
You did not act as deep for years.
I also think it has to do with
Steinberg. Yeah, like I said, we've been getting our asses beat for years. I remember your aunt, my mother, she threw a frying pan at me. You know them cast iron ones. She didn't throw it at my
friend,
but she threw it at me.
Thanks.
And I had to dodge that shit.
Generational curse. Yeah,
but that's something I never did to my children. Right, that's something I would never do to my kids. I would have never thought about doing something like that to my kids.
You understand what I'm saying? These are the generational curses that I'm talking about that we all try to break. We do.
Absolutely.
We try. We try to break them. It doesn't always work. It depends on the person.
The generational curse isn't the beatings. It's not the beatings. It's the beatings that make the child feel that they're getting it unfairly. That's the generational curse.
I think the problem also is when you spank them and that's your only solution for punishment. Like, sometimes it does require it. But you also have to have other ways of punishing your children. You know, people that only have that method, then it becomes abusive. You know, they know that if they forget to pick up their shoes, it's going to be a slap. It's going to be a hit. That's not right. You have to have other methods. I got my behind beat. I think I came out pretty good for it. Everybody I know.
No, you didn't. Nobody on this call is right.
Let's talk about the studies. The studies show. Let's talk about the studies, because this is important.
We're almost
done, right? The studies show that about one third of people who are abused in their childhood will become abusers, right? So we think that we're teaching them a lesson. We're teaching them a lesson.
Define abuse.
Define abuse. Okay.
What is the definition of abuse?
The meaning of it.
Abuse could be in many forms.
Of abuse?
Verbal, it could be physical. It could be in many different forms. But the reality is that if you're abused, you think that that's the way to chastise people or to get to teach people a lesson. So you abuse others because it was done to you.
It's a form of discipline. If you really want to chalk it up to abuse, there's people out here getting abused every day. Whether it's from their boss, whether it's from a coworker, whether it's from a teacher, whether it's from a friend, whether it's from a husband or a wife or whatever. There's people out here being, whether it's physically or mentally, which is the worst, mental abuse, which is the freaking worst that you can do, because that leaves all types of effect, you know, scars beyond the physical. But I'm not going to say one is better than the other, but the whole thing is if you want to look at abuse causing trauma, that means everybody's traumatized every day, because everybody's going through it. So it's beyond a generational curse. It's just that, you know, the abuse has just taken on other forms. You know, certain things are just, you know, due to social media, things are more out there than they used to be before. But I just look at it as we can point fingers in so many different directions, but the root of the matter is if we don't understand what's going on with ourselves, then we're going to abuse others. We're going to treat others differently. And that's what
a lot of that boils down to unaddressed trauma, right, that you experience, and therefore you're displaying it and passing it on. It's transcending. I think, like, one of the differences that I could tell between my relationship with my mother and my relationship with my daughter, right, is that I actually have a great relationship with my daughter, right? I'm her friend. I'm her mother. I'm her confider and all that stuff, right? So that my relationship, the results that I get, and I noticed this, right? Now, what I do know is that she has a last year of relationship with her father, which is actually developing now, right? But what I notice is that his tactics in getting what he wants out of her is fear, pumping fear in her. Whereas I have a general relationship with her, and I can say, Crystal, is that the right thing to do? Well, do you think that, you know, how do you think that makes mommy feel? The last thing she wants to do is disappoint me. So I don't have to yell. I don't have to hit her. I don't have to nothing, because my relationship with her is so solid that, you know what I'm saying, I could talk to her and get results. Whereas him, she don't have a relationship. So it's yelling. There's a lot of bossing around. Yo, what did I tell you to do? Well, it's fear. It's fear. She's not doing what he says because she loves him and that's her father. She's doing it because she fears what's going to come next. He's yelling at me. Oh, my mm-hmm. God, he's going to hit me. He's going to this. So I think it's very important that people need to build a relationship with the people that they're trying to guide.
Listen, yeah, and with us coming up in our generation.
I think you have to have a combination of both. I think your kids have to have a certain amount of fear so that they can have respect, but then you also have to learn to love you also. You shouldn't have to yell at them and scream at them, but sometimes, and I don't know how old your daughter is, you can't always be their friend. Sometimes you have to be the person that says no, and that's going to create a problem. If she's in her teenage years, you probably are experiencing what I'm talking about. But if she's younger, when they're younger, you kind of feel like you can be their friend. As they start to get older, they do start to question you.
That kind of goes downhill.
They have to have a certain amount of fear. Because if they don't respect you, they're not going to respect anybody else out on the street.
Right.
So I think it's a combination. I'm not saying you have to slap them in the mouth when they come into the house, but they also should not feel comfortable walking in the house and cursing you out and thinking they're going to go to their room and sit down. You know, they have to feel like there's going to be a consequence for what they do in regard to discipline.
Yeah, and I like to add to that.
I just don't think the consequence has to be, I'm going to whoop your ass. The consequence is getting, like you said,
when you take away electronics,
you take away things that's valuable, that's important to them, and you help them understand that that's the consequence. And if they really enjoy that, then you're going to get results. But I just think, you know, beating me only made me angry. And I went out there and I displayed and I released it and transferred it to other people. It made me feel better to give it to somebody else because I got it. So that didn't make me...
But again, it's not just the beatings. It's not the beatings. If you take away the electronics and the kid feels that the electron, not just you, I'm talking about, there are other parents who do the non-educational hit on the ass method. I don't let him watch TV. I don't let him play with his video games. I don't let him talk on the phone. But if they continue to do that, and they make the child feel, well, this isn't fair, I didn't do anything wrong, it amounts to the same thing.
But also, they get to the age where, right now, I'm assuming your child is younger, you could take away those devices. Yeah, what happens when she gets a job now? I don't take it, Mom. I can get my own phone. Now what are you going to do? Because at that age, she has not learned to respect you and fear you. She can go out and get her own
phone. She still needs my consent as a minor. You still need my consent.
No, the point is that
there are a lot of kids out there with phones that they didn't get consent for. Their friend might pick it up for them. They can go around and get things that they want. You tell her don't watch TV. She gets right on her phone and she downloads it and watches it anyway. So that's why you kind of, she's younger now, and I understand the age right now. It's important to build her confidence and let her know that she's protected and loved by you. But there also has to be a level of fear there, because teenage years, I'm one of four girls. It's going to be very different than what it is right now.
If the only way to put fear in her is to whoop her ass, that's nuts.
No, you know what? You can't. It's not just that. And we can't. And the thing is, we can't sit back and sit there and say, oh, you know, like that's not an effective tool. Because if you look at society, in jail. Oh, if you don't do what you're supposed to do, you're getting your ass whipped. Look at cops out on the street. Look at other situations going on. Listen, people are going out there getting their ass whipped for less.
And
so
we protest.
We protest stuff and this, that.
But
we're going
to go home
you know
and
what?
Do it to our kids.
But
let me ask
you guys. It's not the same. Some cop or some correctional officer or somebody else out in the street is whipping your kid's ass or whipping your ass because there's some trauma that they went through. So they're taking out their aggression on you.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
It's a different thing. You're whipping your kid's ass is for some type of, it's a discipline thing. It's a consequence to whatever reaction that, you know, whatever they did. So there's a difference. And I'm not condoning it, but at the same time, this is something that's been going on for years. And all of a sudden, now someone just stepped in, or government stepped in and said, hey, you can't do this anymore. So look at all the kids out. Look what's going on now. It's not to say it wasn't going on before, but look at what's going on now. Some of these kids need their asses whipped. Some of them need to find out what pain and fear is, because they have no fear. When a person has no fear, they will do whatever it takes to satisfy themselves. They don't care. They don't care.
Uh-huh.
And that's the problem. There is no fear.
The question I ask is, the only way to get results and put fear in somebody is to whoop their ass? That's the only way?
No. But you know what? It works.
Some of the other tools that you mentioned, they are effective, but what I'm saying is they're effective at certain ages. Like right now you're saying take away this. Yes, taking away that at 9 and 10 and 11 might be fine, but as soon as she's able to get a job and you say, hey, I'm going to take away your cell phone, I can guarantee you your daughter's going to get a cell phone. If she has a paycheck and it means that much to her, she's going to get a cell phone.
Yep,
you know,
go get on.
At that point, that only tool that you've been using is no longer effective. If your children have enough fear in you, they know you love them. They know that you're only disciplining them because you want them to be better. And they know that if you don't discipline them in the house, when they get out on the street, those people don't care about them.
Mm-hmm.
There's a very big difference between getting disciplined on the street than in your house. You're in your house, you do something wrong, you get your backside popped. If it's something, you know, outrageous, you get your backside popped. Outside on the street, you do something wrong, they may take your life.
Was that
you
Nina?
Don't know.
So, go ahead, Mr. Jeff. Was that Nina who was talking?
No.
What?
Who was you call everybody Miss Cherry.
I don't know
Jeff.
Anybody.
Really
I always
insulted.
Forget the name. I got ADHD.
This falls all together.
I'm 100% with you. That's what I said when I first got on this. There has to be a balance between the fear and the love. I'm going to ask all of the parents here a rhetorical question. It's all quick for all of us to take care of our daughters and our sons, you know, in case they do something wrong, we punish them. How many of us, you, the rest of the parents in America, when the kid comes home, just play with the kid, grab the kid, play with the kid and love him just because he or she just walked through the door instead of saying, well, where's your report card? What did your parents or what did your teachers think of you today? And just play with the kid, talk with the kid on a daily basis just to make that kid know you're here in this household. We love you because you were born to us and with us. That's a rhetorical question because I know.
I'll say that.
Every day?
Not, I'm not going to say every single day I've done that because there's, you know, times that I have, but I've done that. I've done that, especially when they were younger. You know, my kids, like I said, they're grown, but when they were younger, when they would leave for school, I'd be like, you know, enjoy y'all day, you know, love y'all. My young, especially the younger, well, the older one, you know, the older one, he's more of a teenager, so you know how that goes. But I still used to tell him, you know, have a good day or whatever. My younger one, he would give me a kiss every time he would use it. He would come out in the house, I'd be like, hey, how you doing? What you doing? Doing okay? What's going on? Let's see what's going on with homework. Okay.
I think that's a motherly thing. I really honestly think that's a motherly thing to do on a day-to-day basis. Like every morning I get up, I make my daughter's lunch for school. I ask her what she wants. I send her off to school with her lunch that she requested, her snack that she requested. I take her off the bus. The first thing I say to her is, how was your day in school? Because you want to know that nothing went bad that day. Get in the house.
But yeah, that
first
was real
bad.
That's real
bad. Talking
about
bad.
That.
Or something good or bad that you want them to
do. It's an everyday routine that never, ever stops, right? You get, book bag goes down. She got 15 minutes before we start homework because I want her to unravel. I want her to focus. Da, 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 da. We talk about whatever goes on in the day. 15 minutes. We do homework. I start dinner. Bada bing, bada boom. It's the same routine every single day. The thing is,
what Mr. Joe is talking about, I get it, but nowadays it's impossible because you have either one parent in the house or one parent out the house or one parent is getting ready to go to work or there's only one parent that's going to work. They don't have that time. They don't have that time to put in to instill that positive reinforcement. This is why a lot of children, and it's not just children, it's people at work. This is why a lot of people at work, they get in their little cliques and their crews and they get around people that understand and relate where they're coming from. It all goes back to the communication. You know, it all goes back to the communication. I mean, I get it. I'm glad you can do it.
Now, it's not even really what I can do. The reality is when I became a parent, I took an understanding that my life has been sacrificed to becoming a mom. So everything that I do is built around her. I can't even work
But everybody's not
going to
do that. Not everybody's going to make those sacrifices. Some people don't make those sacrifices for their spouses or for themselves.
So maybe that's why I can't relate. The reality is I've gotten offered jobs, right, that I couldn't even take because it conflicted with either putting my child on the bus or getting her off. So what I had to
do is that's your level of dedication.
I work remote part-time. You know, my life is built around being a mom to her. I'm a mom to her first, and then my life is built around.
And that's beautiful,
so,
but then at the same time, there's some that don't.
I'm done that as well.
Those are responsibilities of fathers and mothers. You become a father, you become a mother. Everything else takes second place. Boom.
Yeah, but some people don't think that way. You're right, but some people don't think that when you have parents that don't think like that.
That's why the trauma sets in, doesn't it?
You're right about that.
Well, let me tell you something.
You're right about that.
To the people that know me, know that when it comes to work, my work ethic is ridiculous. And yeah, I can work for 24 hours. I can do what I need to do because I need to go out there and do what I need to do, not only for myself. Because if I can't take care of myself, then how can I take care of my kids? So the thing is, there was the trauma that I have to deal with. At 47 years old, it's like, damn, did I even spend enough time? Did I put in that work? I mean, yeah, my kid talks to me. Yeah, we have a great relationship, but there's always going to be that question because a lot of people do not have that time. There's certain responsibilities and things that we have to take care of. So sometimes parenting is not at the forefront because you have to be that responsible adult to take care of that life. Yeah, yes, you can listen. It can be done. I'm not saying it can't be done. But in my personal experience, yeah, I had to go out there and get it because I had to make sure my daughter had it. I had to make sure she had certain things.
But you can do that when you have a significant other that can, you know, fulfill the role. The reality is, you know, what scares me is them single mothers that's out here talking about, mama gotta live too, mama gotta live too. Nah. It's over. It's over. You gave it up.
Yeah, but see, well, once again, I'll tell you.
Well, I'm a single mom. My son's now in his 20s. And I get what you're saying, because I do the same thing that you did. But I also have to say, Mr. Joe, you had me feeling bad. No, in all honesty, there were times my son came home to the house and I wasn't like, let's go play. I was like, oh, will he go to his room so I can relax? There were just times where I needed time for me.
Well,
but
sure.
I will also say my life changed completely when I had him. I did center a lot of things. There were jobs I turned down. There were, I would tell you, my son is an athlete. He's been an athlete for a while. And I would take off from work to make sure that I can make every single game he had. You know, if he needed to travel out of state, I'm the one that's driving the car. We're getting on the plane and we're jumping to go to Vegas so he can do that game down there. So
I tell you,
I get it. There are sacrifices that you make. I did
sacrifice. Don't be a mom investing. Be a single mom investing in your children's futures. Oh, forget about it. Your life is over. I'm at cheerleading. I'm at dance. You know, I just did a birthday party at catering to 28 kids on a Sunday.
But
I will tell you now, he is in college. And when you give up so much and lose yourself, you have to find yourself after they're gone. And I remember like a word of advice my grandmother gave me when I was looking for a house. She said, don't buy a house for your kids because they're going to leave. So buy the house that you want that's going to be comfortable for them, but keep in the back of your mind, they grow up and they go. And that's the kind of thing that you have to think with your own life. Yes, you want to be there for your kids. You want to do these things. But keep in mind that one day your child is going to leave, and then you have to continue on with yourself. Just don't sacrifice so much. That's the only advice I can give you.
And going to events, it sounds good, doesn't it? You know, parents go there, and yada yada. Fine. I had to finally get my father to come see me when I was on the track team. Finally came. Okay, cool. So, I'm the last leg of the 440. The kid before me messes up the handoff. So, I would have won the race. I came in second. So, my father's in the bleachers. Excuse me. And I say to him, see, I would have been first, Dad. But the kid messed up. He acted like, all right, you know. So, I knew he's there, maybe because out of some sort of parental obligation. But as the other caller was saying, it didn't resonate. All right? So, yeah, you can show up. You can be there. You can talk. But if the kid feels that the parent doesn't give a shit, then everything is lost.
And with that, we're going to toss it to Vroom Vroom, Mr. Hot Rod. Go ahead, Mr. Hot Rod.
Hello.
Hey
guys.
What's your trauma?
My trauma is when my wife told me that she was pregnant. I was like, "Who's the father? I know it's not me."
You're an asshole. I'm surprised he hasn't smothered you in your sleep yet. Seriously. I am really surprised.
I'm like, wait a minute. It was only 2 minutes. It was only 2 minutes. How did this happen? It couldn't happen within 2 minutes. No, it can't.
I ain't gonna say it's only 2 minutes.
But,
he's a mess.
Because I'm not hot rod, duh. No, but going back to Ms. Cherry, what she said, going back to Ms. Cherry, she's right. There's a place and time for kids to behave themselves, but I get this all the time when I'm outside in public that my kids are well-behaved. And I turn around like, whose kids? They're like, my kids are well-behaved. But they're respectful because they know. When it's not at home, they can act up, make noise. I give them the yelling and the screaming and the pop-out. But they know in public, when I give them the eyes, they know, calm your ass down or you really going to get it. But there's only a certain level of craziness you can handle at one time. So discipline does work within kids sometimes. I'm done.
Listen, I know that look all too well. My mom used that look a few times. She didn't have to touch me.
And then see, that's the thing. Mm-hmm. What look is there nowadays? What look
there
is
there? Isn't
one. I mean, it's not. You don't get really from the parents. And once again, if we have to bring, we got to bring it back to adults. The adults may get it at work. They may not get it at work. Like, you know what? The whole thing is this. There's a lot of things that we put on our kids. There's a lot of things that we put on this generation that we haven't even figured out with ourselves. And the whole thing is, when you talk about breaking generational curses, we have to break certain curses within ourselves. And a lot of adults don't want to take accountability for their own mental issues. They don't want to take accountability for their own hurt and their own traumas. And once we're able to take accountability and acknowledge it, then we can go forward and try, hopefully be that better person, you know, for our children, or be that better person for our spouse. But once again, it boils down to accountability. And then after accountability, then there's communication.
Are we closing out?
So why
out?
Have a child?
I guess we're about to go out. Well, listen,
that's a whole other show. Are we
closing out? Yeah, the mental issues. Yeah, it's so much. It's a lot of angles.
Yeah.
But the main thing that, you know, this is definitely a great topic. But when we walk away from it, you know, when everything's over, then what?
Right.
What do we do? Just like was asked to me earlier. What's up? Mm-hmm. Go ahead, right?
No, Brother B, to your point, there are parents who should not be parents out there. If some people know they should not have kids, but they're still doing it anyway for whatever reason, why is that?
The same reason. People going to do a bunch of things that they're not supposed to. We would live in a perfect world if people did what was right. Mm-hmm. Reality is, if we're really trying to break generational curses, the reality is that we need to address the trauma that is within us before we can address the trauma within our children. I also think that parents need to face the reality that we don't have the answers. Just because we're parents, we don't have the answers to everything. And there's nothing wrong with seeking professional help. It's nothing. It doesn't make you crazy. It doesn't make you less of a parent. In fact, it makes you a better parent to reach out to the professionals to get help. So I say in closing that, you know, to address the trauma, sometimes we got to seek professional. And that's really the way of, you know, breaking the curse, is doing what our parents didn't do and told us not to do. And, talking about it, addressing it, and healing each other, man.
So Joe, can you be my father now? One thing I will say, you know, before we close out is, to answer your question, Hot Rod, you can't stop the nature of humanity. You can't stop someone's nature. Like, they are who they are. People do certain things just because they do it because they can. They do it because someone tells them not to, so they just do the opposite.
Some people
don't have filter, and some people don't have limits. So they keep, you know, walking on that edge until they fall off. So, you know, with that being said, you know, thank you, Mr. Joe, Lena, for a great topic. Red, Miss Cherry, Hot Rod, you know, falling in. Going forward, I mean, as I said before, let's say again, man, let's try to be
healing, man. Get that healing. You know, you need it. Your kids need it. Your family need it. Go get that healing by any means necessary. Address the traumas. Address the issues.
But for some people, the healing may be in a bottle or a needle or whipping some ass. And that's not the way, but that's another topic for another day. But everyone be well. Have a great week.
All right.
Be beautiful. And be beautiful to one another. Another episode in the can.
Monday nights,
Hot Rod, Sean Black, K-Dog, Absolute Truth. Peace out.
Yo!
These guys.
Yeah, Mika. Thank you, Mika, for calling. I forget about Mika. I'm sorry. I'm sorry,
Mika. Who's Mika?
Love you guys.
Because she's shorter than me, that's why. Because you shorter than me, that's all you got.
I'm sorry.
Ready, Mika?
I couldn't see. Y'all have a good night. Take care.
Later, guys.
Good night, everyone. Have a great
all right.
Good night.